This is Morning Edition from NPR News. I'm Bob Edwards. The U.S. Supreme Court yesterday issued its most far-reaching decision on race in a generation. The court spoke with a decisive, though divided, voice, ruling that race may be a so-called plus factor in college admissions. NPR Legal Affairs correspondent Nina Totenberg reports.
Until the 1950s, America's institutions of higher learning were almost completely segregated by race. By the 1970s, though, affirmative action programs in the form of quotas, set-aside seats for minorities, were in full swing. In 1978, in the famous Bakke case, the Supreme Court put an end to quotas. The deciding vote in that case was cast by Justice Lewis Powell, who, writing for himself alone, said that race could be a plus factor in college admissions, but that imposing rigid numerical quotas was unconstitutional since it closed off competition entirely for a set number of academic places. In the quarter century since then, virtually every selective institution of higher learning in the country has adopted an affirmative action program avowedly modeled on the Powell plus factor plan. But conservative groups have continued to challenge these programs in the courts, contending that they discriminate on the basis of race in violation of the Constitution. Justice Powell's opinion, they argued, was not binding since it spoke for only one justice. Yesterday, however, a 5-member Supreme Court majority firmly embraced the Powell affirmative action rationale. Writing for the majority, Justice Sandra Day O'Connor said that racial diversity is an essential part of higher education's mission. In order to cultivate a set of leaders with legitimacy in the eyes of the citizenry, she said, it is necessary that the path to leadership be visibly open to talented and qualified individuals of every race and ethnicity. And she rejected the argument put forth by the Bush administration that other race-neutral policies, whether based on high school class rank or lotteries, would necessarily work any better. The court's affirmative action ruling came in two cases, one testing the undergraduate admissions program, the other the law school admissions program. The court struck down the undergraduate program, which was based on a point system that automatically assigned 20 points to any applicant from an underrepresented minority group. The point system, said Justice O'Connor, was a mechanized selection index score that by and large automatically determined which applicants got in and which didn't. In contrast, she said, the system for the law school involved a complete assessment of each applicant, grades, test scores, recommendations, undergraduate course regimen, an essay, an evaluation of the life experience and skills that the applicant would bring to the classroom. Using race as a plus factor in that context, said O'Connor, was permissible in a society where, as she said, race still matters. Moreover, said O'Connor, some consideration of numbers to make sure that there are enough minorities to achieve a so-called critical mass is permissible. She said some flexible use of numbers is quite different from the use of rigid quotas, and she noted that at the law school, some minority students were rejected who had higher grades and test scores than whites who were admitted. University of Michigan President Mary Sue Coleman called the court's decision a huge win.
The use of affirmative action is permissible in undergraduate and law school admissions at universities, and that's just a tremendous victory.
Alvin Poussant, associate dean at Harvard Medical School, agreed, saying that as a practical matter, the court's ruling against the undergraduate point system would not be significant.
That's not really a great loss in this decision, because what they're saying actually is you can have affirmative action, but don't be so blatant about it by setting up an arbitrary system giving 20 points to minorities that, you know, whites can't get. But if you look at the whole picture and you're a bit more subtle and low key and so on, it's fine to use race as one of many factors.
Indeed, university presidents across the country said that the court's decision upholding the law school admissions program would provide a model for how to create affirmative action programs that would stand up in court. For college and university administrators, yesterday's ruling means that the legal sword of Damocles has been eased from over their heads. Many had been threatened with lawsuits not only over affirmative action programs, but also over scholarship recruitment and mentoring programs as well. Here's Shelley Steinbach of the Council on Higher Education, which represents the 1,800 colleges and universities across the country.
I think the zone under which colleges can be challenged has been diminished by today's decision.
Some opponents of affirmative action conceded that yesterday's ruling was a major blow. The Manhattan Institute's Abigail Thernstrom is a longtime critic of affirmative action policies.
I'm in a rage. I'm beside myself. I'm in meltdown. I'm totally dismayed. Because the Supreme Court has basically signed off on racial quotas and on racial classifications, racial double standards in education, and that will extend to employment, contracting, and so forth into the future.
But Thernstrom said it's time now to abandon the legal fight and move on to addressing the reason for the racial gap in test scores, the inadequate education of minority students in kindergarten to 12th grade.
There is no excuse for that racial gap in the elementary and secondary school years. We must close it. It is a moral imperative, and it's not rocket science.
Other opponents said they would take the fight to the political arena. Ward Connerly, who successfully sponsored the ballot initiative in California, banning any consideration of race in college admissions, says he will now go to other states.
I'm going to go into Michigan and get an initiative on the ballot. No, I don't know. I say that somewhat in jest, but I think that really is where we're probably headed. The court is saying you may. It is not saying you must. That decision has to be made by the people themselves. The battle will continue.
But in at least three states, Texas, Louisiana, and Mississippi, where previous court decisions had outlawed affirmative action, such programs are likely to be revived. In Texas yesterday, the president of the University of Texas said he would now draft affirmative action policies allowed by yesterday's ruling. 7 years ago, when a federal appeals court barred all consideration of race at the University of Texas, the admission of black students at the prestigious law school plummeted from 40 to 4. In the years since, the university has made up about half that loss with privately funded minority scholarships and recruitment, but it is still way behind where it was before, even though the state's college-age population is now 53% black and Latino. At the undergraduate level, the university has done better because of a state law mandating that the university admit all students who place in the top 10% of their class. The law was enacted in response to the dropping minority admissions at the University of Texas after the appeals court decision in 1996. University officials, however, point out that whatever successes this program has had are due in large part to the segregated secondary schools in a state with a huge minority population. Texas professor Doug Laycock, who studied the Texas statistics, notes that a class rank preference would do little for a state like Michigan, which has an overwhelmingly white population in most of the state. Moreover, Laycock contends that a preference system based on class rank is, as he puts it, a terrible way to make admissions decisions because it ignores test scores, the degree of difficulty of the courses taken in high school, it ignores character and leadership skills, it focuses only on class rank.
It was mechanical, it was quota-like, but it was based on class rank rather than based on race. And I don't think any university would pick students that way if they had a free choice.
Whatever the shortcomings of a preference based on class rank, however, many view these plans as preferable to preferences based on race. Among those is President Bush. As he put it yesterday in a statement, we must look first to these race-neutral approaches to make campuses more welcoming for all students. Nina Totenberg, NPR News, Washington.
The Supreme Court's affirmative action opinion and oral arguments are at npr.org.